Mode. I'm Tommy McNeil. The U.S. government's top infectious disease expert says a country could see 100,000 to 200,000 deaths from the coronavirus outbreak. Dr. Anthony Fauci said on Sunday that millions could become infected in the United States. Faced with Fauci's grim projections and the possibility that even more could die in the U.S., without measures to keep people away from each other, President Trump extended federal guidelines recommending people stay home for another 30 days until the end of April. The tally kept by Johns Hopkins University shows the U.S. had over 140,000 infections and 2,400 deaths. Worldwide, more than 33,000 people have died, half of them in Spain and Italy. New York has surpassed 1,000 deaths from the coronavirus outbreak less than a month after the first case was detected in the state. The virus has torn through New York City and its suburbs with frightening speed. Most of the deaths have happened in a span of just a few days. New York City reported in the evening that its toll had risen to 776. The official total number of statewide deaths is not expected to be released until Monday. State media confirmed Monday that nuclear-armed North Korea successfully tested super-large multiple rocket launchers, but leader Kim Jong-un was not described as commanding the drill, as analysts say Pyongyang seems to normalize its launches. With the world focused on the coronavirus pandemic and North Korea insisting it has not had a single COVID-19 case, the isolated state has carried out four such firings this month. Unusually, the official Korean Central News Agency, KCNA, did not say in its report that Kim had directed Sunday's test. South Korea had said two projectiles presumed to be ballistic missiles were fired Sunday. This is VOA News. Chinese President Xi Jinping has called for swift action from the international community to defeat COVID-19 as leaders of the Group of 20 convened an extraordinary summit to coordinate multilateral responses to the pandemic. He said, now is a crucial moment, a time for us to rise up to challenge and act with swiftness. This is the first time for leaders of world's main economies and international organizations to have face-to-face negotiations via a video conference. It is also the first video summit in the history of G20. At the conference, leaders carried out urgent communication and coordination. Among those proposals, President Xi's four proposals drew international attention. The four proposals are, first, the G20 needs to be resolute in fighting an all-out global war against the COVID-19 outbreak. Second, the G20 needs to make a collective response for control and treatment at the international level. Third, the G20 needs to support international organizations in playing their active roles. Fourth, the G20 needs to enhance international macroeconomic policy coordination. The Colombian National Police is resorting to creative methods to urge citizens to stay in their homes during the quarantine to prevent further spreading of coronavirus. In Medellin, a funeral car carrying a coffin and wreaths drove through the streets of the city while issuing alert messages for citizens to stay in their homes during the state of emergency. In the afternoon, the Colombian police entertained neighbors by singing. In another Colombian city, police used drones with loudspeakers to warn people to stay home. Passengers on a virus-stricken cruise liner entered the Panama Canal in the Central America Sunday after they were told the company was still searching for a port which will allow them to disembark even as they pleaded for help. The Panama Canal Authority said the Zaandam liner had entered the canal, which connects the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, on Sunday afternoon after transferring healthy passengers to another ship and restocking supplies. Holland America Line President Orlando Ashford admitted they were still searching for a port after the mayor of Fort Lauderdale, the ship's intended destination, said the Florida city could not take the risk of accepting the passengers. According to American health experts, the novel coronavirus did not originate from a seafood market in central China's Wuhan city. Since the outbreak of the epidemic, the origin of the novel coronavirus has been widely discussed online, and conspiracy theories around it have also emerged endlessly. Previous scientific studies have already suggested that virus which causes COVID-19 originated through natural processes. In a recent interview with ABC News, Dr. Robert Gary, a professor at the Tulane University School of Medicine, once again pointed out that it's a misconception to believe the virus originated in Wuhan.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Monday, March 30th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Mali held parliamentary elections on Sunday amid coronavirus pandemic fears.
People were asked first to wash their hands with soap before entering the voting precinct. Once in the precinct, you are offered hand sanitizer before touching anything.
Yaw Samaki is the parliamentary candidate in Mali's largest electoral district of Kati. Kenya's coronavirus cases rise to 42. Gambia declares a coronavirus state of emergency, and the former leader of Uganda's main opposition, FDC, welcomes a court ruling striking down the country's notorious Public Water Management Act.
It is welcome because it takes away the cover of the regime in its abuse of human rights. It's a tool for regime survival.
The Guinean government refused opposition allegations of murder in the town of Nzere-Kore, and the opposition says it will never recognize the results of the March 22 referendum. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley Sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Mali voted Sunday in parliamentary elections amid jihadist insecurity and coronavirus pandemic fears. Yaw Samaki, candidate in Mali's largest electoral district of Kati, says the government took all coronavirus prevention steps to protect the voters.
People are trickling in to vote for their representatives. Of course, in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic, people have not come out in as great a number as they used to, because many people have been using the fear tactic to keep voters at home. Nevertheless, I think that we will reach at least a 20-30% participation rate.
The government had promised to provide additional hygiene measures to protect voters. Did this happen?
I personally voted this morning, and I have observed that the hygiene measures that the government has promised were actually offered on each of the voting precincts. People were asked first to wash their hands with soap before entering the voting precincts. Once in the precincts, you are offered hand sanitizer before touching anything. And then you are given your ballot and you vote. And on your way out, you are also offered the hand sanitizer. So government has followed through on its promise to provide hygiene measures to all of the voting precincts.
The government went ahead to have these elections because it said it wants the new parliament to fight against insecurity. Do you think this was a wise decision to have the elections?
James, it was a wise decision on the part of the government of Mali to go ahead with holding the elections, even in the face of the coronavirus epidemic. It is important for Mali to preserve our institutional arrangements. The parliament has been term limited for a little over a year now, and there is a need to offer the people of Mali representation. So this election was an opportunity for people to vote and renew the parliament, and I do believe it was a good decision. And also, there is no indication that holding this election will contribute in a significant measure to the spread of the coronavirus. In Mali right now, we have fewer than 20 cases confirmed. So if we continue the containment measures, if we continue to follow the hygiene measures, I believe that we will be able to contain the spread of the disease.
Yaw Samaki is a parliamentary candidate in Mali's largest electoral district of Kati. You're speaking with us from the capital, Bamako. A Kenyan nurse working in Rome, Italy, has called on fellow Kenyans to treat the COVID-19 pandemic with a lot of seriousness. As Marie Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the warning comes as the number of coronavirus cases in Kenya rose to 42.
Kenya has already recorded its first death case of a patient who was suffering from diabetes and recently traveled from Swaziland via South Africa as the number of infected patients rise to 42. Mary Mwangi, A Kenyan nurse working in Rome, Italy, said that Italy started on a lower rate, but the situation is unbearable, urging Kenyans to adhere to the rules set by the government to avoid the crisis.
My biggest fear is how the news are being received in Kenya, because some people are really joking on it. Maybe they are not seeing how serious it is. I would say that Italy has one of the best medical care, but the situation is really getting out of hand, hoping that it will get fixed as fast as possible, that is.
Being in the medical industry, she says most of her colleagues have been infected by the virus and even lost lives.
I'll tell you that we've got fear within ourselves. But what is happening here, if you are a doctor and you had a contact, they are putting you on a quarantine for 21 days, unlike the 14 days that's known well. The problem is that sincerely, when one medical personnel is infected, it becomes to a threat to the whole world or even to the whole hospital. So it's very, very serious.
Kenya's health ministry says more than 2,000 people who arrived in the country from Monday to Wednesday last week have been placed under mandatory quarantine. Speaking in Nairobi yesterday Sunday, Health Cabinet Secretary Mutahi Kagwe said that as per yesterday Sunday, Kenya had 42 COVID-19 positive cases.
We have received confirmation that 4 people have tested positive for the disease. They include 1 Kenyan and 3 foreigners from America, Cameroon, and Burkina Faso. This now brings to 42 the number of those who have tested positive for the virus in Kenya.
The Kenyan dusk to dawn curfew still ongoing since Friday last week as Kenyans struggle to beat the curfew time, especially those in busy cities. Mr. Kagwe says employers who will not release the workers on time should provide accommodation for them.
I want to urge employers to kindly release their employees in time to be able to meet the curfew time of 7 p.m. If they do not want to allow their employees to leave on time, then they should prepare accommodation for them.
Nairobi remains the epicenter of the virus, leading with 31 cases, followed by the coastal region counties. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
Gambian President Adamman Barrow has declared a national emergency to combat the coronavirus pandemic. He has ordered all non-essential businesses closed and suspended all public gatherings. Pandere Umbai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
In a national state address on Friday, President Barrow outlined the decision behind his move to declare a state of emergency in the country.
In less than 2 weeks after my last address to the nation, the situation in the country has changed. As confirmed by the Ministry of Health, so far, more than 30 tests have been conducted. 3 have been positive, and 1 is still inconclusive. Only 1 person among the confirmed cases in the country passed away.
The president then reaffirmed his government's commitment in combating the coronavirus pandemic. This, he says, has been manifested by his government's efforts in reviewing and intensifying prevention measures in tackling the spread of the virus in the country.
We know with certainty that mass movement of people and public gatherings are threats to the containment of COVID-19. Therefore, in addition to the measures mentioned in my last address, decisions has been taken to impose new restrictions. To curtail our exposure to infection through close interactions, my government has taken the decisions to scale down government operations.
The president knows that the corona pandemic continues to pose what he called a grave concern both globally and nationally.
I have now signed a second proclamation declaring a state of public emergency throughout the Gambia. Under this proclamation, the following measures shall be enforced with effect from today, 27 March 2020. 1, all non-essential food outlets in all markets and enclosed shopping areas shall be closed.
The national shutdown has also affected entertainment outlets such as bars, cafeterias, cinemas, video clubs, and nightclubs. Barrow has also signed a presidential proclamation regulating commodity prices.
I have been informed that there are enough supplies of essential commodities for the immediate and medium-term needs of the country.
Barrow has also called on the public to report any person who has escaped from quarantine. This followed the recent escaping of some quarantine passengers. He warns that it is illegal for anyone to harbor suspects fleeing from quarantine. For VOA Daybreak Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Monday, March 30th. The former leader of Uganda's main opposition Forum for Democratic Change, the FDC party, Dr. Kizza Besigye, says he welcomes last Friday's constitutional court ruling striking down a section of the Public Order Management Act. Police have used the act to prevent opponents of the government from holding political rallies. In its ruling, the court said the act violates parts of Uganda's constitution, such as freedom of assembly and association. Dr. Besigye says while there is a likelihood that President Museveni will appeal the ruling, it is, however, welcomed because it takes away the cover of the government in its abuse of human rights.
The ruling of the Constitutional Court to annul the obnoxious law known as Public Order Management Act in Uganda is still subject to a possible appeal in the Supreme Court. And I consider that it's highly likely that the NRM junta will indeed appeal to the Supreme Court. And even while the appeal is there, they could even seek a stay of execution. This was indeed a truly welcome and heartwarming ruling. I must say that I did not expect this ruling to come from our constitutional court, because the courts of law in Uganda, just like all the other institutions of state, have for some time been under total capture by the junta led by Yoweri Museveni. So this ruling was indeed a truly surprising one and most welcome. It is welcome because it takes away the cover of the regime in its abuse of human rights. The purpose of the abuse of rights, it's a tool for regime survival, because the purpose of the law was to restrict the basic rights of assembly, the right of association, the right of movement, the right of expression, the right of demonstration. All these basic political rights were curtailed under the Public Order Management Act. And the reason that these rights are curtailed is to undermine any form of organized political opposition in Uganda to cause change of government in Uganda.
Do you think, Dr. Besigye, that by the court striking down this law will mark the beginning of the return of real political democracy and also an end to the criminalization of political competition in Uganda?
I do not expect that the annulling of this law is going to change the attitude of the regime, that the annulling of this act will herald the return of democratic freedoms, but their actions will not have the cover of the law.
Dr. Kizza Besigye is the former leader of Uganda's main opposition Forum for Democratic Change. You're speaking with us from the capital, Kampala. The Guinean government has refuted opposition allegations that more than 21 people were killed in Nzere-Kori during the March 22 controversial constitutional referendum and parliamentary elections. The denial came as the country's electoral commission last Friday announced the results, saying about 92% of ballots were in favor of adopting the new constitution, while 8% were against. The opposition National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, which opposed the referendum, says government militias made up of local hunters and a former rebel group during the Liberian Civil War carried out the killings. Information Minister Amara Sampare says the problem in Nzere-Kori is a result of an ongoing dispute between two ethnic groups.
The government deplored the fact that some people were killed, but we not agree with the number that have been announced by opposition leaders. Investigation are already started, and it is better for us to wait until we have results from those investigations to understand exactly what happened that day. But again, the government is very sorry for that. The government deplore it, and the government have addressed condolences to the families.
Mr. Minister, we are told by the opposition that your government has militias in the region. How true is it?
The Guinea government has no militia. I insist on it. No militia. That is rubbish. The things that are happening in Zerikore is a very, very old conflict that exists between two ethnic groups. The one is called Konya, and the second is called Gerze. And everything started because one old man were killed after, I think, he has been injured or beaten by some people. I don't exactly know what happened there. And after that old man died, I think it was Gerze or Konya, and that is the reason why the other community wanted to go for revenge. That's the story. There is no political thing inside. It is a old story based on the conflict that exists between those two communities.
Amara Sampare is Guinea's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. In Guinea, the opposition National Front for the Defense of the Constitution, NFDC, said it does not and will never recognize the March 22 controversial constitutional referendum as legitimate. NFDC member Faya Milimuno also accused the government of responsibility for the deaths of more than 21 people in the town of Nzerikori during the March 22 constitutional referendum and parliamentary elections.
The situation in Nzerikori is very tough as we speak, because many people have been killed over there, and everything is been manipulated by the power. And it is the power taking care of two group of militia in that area. Everybody remember the group called Ilimo during the war in Liberia. That Ilimo group is still alive in Nzerikore, in Masenta. And every time they've been manipulated by the government to perform killings of other people.
We spoke with the Minister of Information of Guinea, and he says that the situation in Nzerikore has nothing to do with government security. Instead, he said it is an issue of a dispute between two tribes in the region.
It is the government which have sent to the area the militia we call Donzo. Those are hunters. Traditionally, we have hunters in any single community here in Guinea. But those from Upper Guinea, Alpha Conde and his government are using those hunters as a militia, most of the time to perform killings that are ethnically oriented. And the FNDC has called for the international community to send investigators, because what is going on in Nzerikore, to establish the truth about it, we need an international investigation.
Now that the referendum is over, what is next now for the opposition?
First, FNDC doesn't recognize what happened on the 22nd to be considered as elections. So everything coming out of that process is not recognized. It's like what they call the so-called new constitution. We are going to abide by the constitution of May 7, 2010. And also the parliament, they want to install based on what happened on the 22nd. That parliament is not going to be recognized. So we are going to fight him until he and the extremists around him are removed from power.
Fayamili Muno is a member of the National Front for the Defense of the Constitution in Guinea. He was speaking with us from the capital, Conakry. It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you, James. We begin the sports in Nigeria, where despite the cancellation or postponement of major sporting events within and outside the country, Nigeria Ministry of Youth and Sports Development says it will keep and honor all contracts with its athletes. Nigeria Minister of Youth and Sports, Sunday Dari, speaking to the media in Abuja, said the athletes can fall back on the funds made available by the Adapt an Athlete campaign to train and keep in shape at these trying times.
The Nigerian authority, through the sports ministry, called off the National Sports Festival. Several of our athletes overseas could not practice again because the sporting facilities were shut down. What we have done as a ministry and as a country is to be in touch with each one of them because we have a database to know what their plans are, to know what support they need. The Adopt an Athlete plan that we have, the funds are going to them. So we're happy that those funds can help them at this period when some of them cannot even make money from competitions. They're free to leverage on that. They can also look for indoor facilities where they can practice, they can pay to use those facilities. So there's a continuous engagement with our athletes.
He reaffirmed that the country will stick to taking part in other 11 sports when the Tokyo Olympic takes place at a rescheduled date next year.
Yes, we've agreed it'll be 11 sports. We're going to stick to that. A couple of qualifiers are still pending. Not all of them have completed their qualifiers. About 7 have completed their qualifiers. Funds are already approved. As soon as they can go for the qualifiers when there's a stem in the COVID-19 spread, they will definitely. Don't also forget that preparing for the Olympics is a continuum. The athletes must continue to practice.
Now to football news. Nigeria international and Manchester United striker Odion Ighalo's superb strike against Austria's Lansk in the Europa League has won Manchester United's Match Goal of the Month award. The Nigeria's driven strike to open scoring for the Red Devils after an impressive ball juggling pulled 32% of votes. Ighalo beat off fierce competition from Scott McTominay's immemorable late goal against Manchester City and Bruno Fernandes' first strike against Everton. Ghana Football Association General Secretary Prosper Harrison Addo has stated that clubs will be given time to prepare their teams before the Premier League resumes after the coronavirus pandemic. The top flight is in the second week of a one-month suspension as part of the measures to curb the spread of the disease. Ghana legend and former Asante Kotoko star Opoku Afria is dead. The 1978 African Cup of Nations winner died in Kumasi on Sunday, aged 75. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a very good day. And that's it for this Monday, March 30th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with all of our engineers. I'm James Butte in Washington, hoping you have a very productive week.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Clotty, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.